We had seen last week the Gemara in Baba Metzia, the Gemara that told us the story of Rabbi Eliezer and the sages, the machlokes about Tanur Shel Achnai, the oven that's like a snake, that oven that was cut in a circular fashion, and you put the sand in between the pieces, and then that oven was used, and they had a machlokes whether that oven can be tameh, whether that oven can become spiritually defiled. You could give out the ones with tanit because it was two-sided. No. Okay, just a second. We had seen that Rabbi Eliezer, the famous Tanner, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanos, had disagreed with the sages as to whether that tanur is tameh or not. And in the course of the argument, Rabbi Eliezer said it's pure, our sages said it's tameh, and Rabbi Eliezer brought different proofs. He said if the halacha is like me, the carob tree will prove it, and the carob tree got uprooted and traveled 100 amma, 100 footsteps, or 400 amma. They said that's not a proof. He said if the halacha is like me, then the water will prove it, and the stream started streaming backwards. And they said, you don't bring a proof from a stream. And he said, if the halacha is like me, then the walls of the Beis Medrash will prove the halacha is like me. And the walls of the Beis Medrash started caving in until Rabbi Yeshua, who was his contemporary, if you recall in our introduction to Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, we had discussed how Rabbi Yeshua was Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, the blacksmith, who was very poor, a great sage, who had taken Rabbi Eliezer in when Rabbi Eliezer was a young man who hadn't known anything. Rabbi Yeshua had taken him as a host, and then Rabbi Eliezer grew and grew, and they learned together until they became basically like chavrusas. They disagreed throughout the Shas. You see Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. They were contemporaries, even though initially Rabbi Yeshua was the one who took Rabbi Eliezer in. They both had learned together by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And when Rabbi Eliezer said this, so Rabbi Yeshua yelled at the walls, and he said, if the sages are arguing with one another in halacha, what's it your business? What do you interfere? And the walls remained tilted in. They didn't straighten out of respect for Rabbi Eliezer, and they didn't cave in totally out of respect for Rabbi Yeshua. And Rabbi Eliezer told them, if the halacha is like me, then the heavens will prove it. And a heavenly voice came out and said, what are you arguing to Rabbi Eliezer for? The halacha is like him everywhere. And Rabbi Yeshua stood on his feet, and he said, lo b'shamayim hi. And this was the point, this was the purpose of quoting this whole story. We continued the Medrash, and we continued the Gemara, that they decided that he had argued in too strong a fashion. He hadn't given in when he saw all the sages disagreed with him. And they had decided to ostracize him halachically. They put him in Nidui. And we had quoted that Rabbi Natan, who was the end of the Tanan, a contemporary of Rebbe, when Rebbe compiled the Mishnah in Jerusalem, in Israel. So Rabbi Natan in Babylon compiled his set of Mishnayot. There was the same project going on in two places. Rabbi Natan HaBavli, Rabbi Natan in Babylon, was compiling Mishnayot at the same time that Rebbe was compiling in Israel Mishnayot. So Rabbi Natan met up with Eliyahu, and he asked him, what's God doing at this time? Now, what was God doing at that time when the sages disagreed? And God sent out a heavenly voice that said, I agree with Rabbi Eliezer. And the rest of the sages said, yeah, but it's not in heavens. You told us to go with the majority opinion. So Elio told him at that time, God smiled, so to speak, and he said, my sons have won me, my sons have won me. And on that day, they took all the cases in which Rabbi Eliezer had disagreed with him with this oven and said that the things made in it are pure, and they said that they're defiled, and they burnt them. And they came to account, and they put him in Nidui. And Rabbi Akiva said, who's going to go to tell him that we've ruled against him, put him in ostracization? I'll go, because if someone who's improper goes, then the world will be destroyed. And Rabbi Akiva wore black clothing and wrapped himself in black clothing, and he sat a distance from him, 4 footsteps away. Rabbi Eliezer asked him, what's going on? Why are you sitting so far away from me? And he told him, Rebbe, I think your friends have decided to separate from you. And with that, he hinted to him that that's what's going on. Rabbi Eliezer heard this, he tore his clothing, took off his shoes, because a person who's in ostracization has to behave like an avel. There are many things like avelos in Nidui, and that's what he did. And he sat on the floor, just like an avel, and he started crying. And at that hour, the world lost a third of the olives, a third of the wheat, and a third of the barley. And some say that even every woman that was kneading dough, the dough went sour. So in heavens, they were upset that this is what's happening to Rabbi Eliezer. He himself, on that day, wherever he looked at, got burnt, and Rabbi Gamliel was coming on a ship, and a huge wave came to sink him. And he said, this must be because of what we did to Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. And he stood on his feet, and he said, God, you know that I didn't do this for my honor, or my father's honor, the honor of the house of the Nasi. I did it for your honor, so there would not be many machlokot in Israel. This was another point that we had seen, that Rav Shri Ragon had quoted this story to illustrate how there was a machloket. There was a disagreement. But Rabbi Gamliel says, I had to instill the authority that we do go by the majority opinion, and even though Rabbi Eliezer is coming with a different tradition and he wants to rule his way, we're not going to go with that. This is the tradition we have, and this is how the halacha has to go from now on. Now, in general, we have to notice that Rabbi Gamliel was a young Nasi. We'll elaborate on this, I don't know if we'll get to today or next week, on the stories with Rabbi Gamliel, not to be confused with his grandfather, who was Rabbi Gamliel, who was a very old man. This Rabbi Gamliel was a young Nasi from the house of Rabbi Yehuda, from the house of David. And he instituted many things. So this is one of the very strong stories that happened in his lifetime. So the Gemara had told us that Rabbi Lezer's wife was Rabbi Gamliel's sister. Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi who ran the show. And his sister was married to Rabbi Lezer, so they were brother-in-laws. And she ensured that every time he finished Shmona Esrei, she'd stop him so that he shouldn't do Tachanun right away. And then one day she thought that Rosh Chodesh was 2 days. She made a mistake. She thought it was 2 day Rosh Chodesh. So she thought there's no Tachanun. And she didn't come in. And others say that what happened was a poor man stopped her at the door. And by the time she got to him, he had already fallen on his face and said Tachanun. And she ran in and she said, get up, you're killing my brother. And by the time he got up, the trumpets were blown from Rabbi Gamliel's house that he had passed away. So he asked her, how'd you know this? How'd you know that Tachanun is such a powerful prayer? So she said, I come from, Rabbi Gamliel's my brother, we come from King David. And we have a tradition going back to David HaMelech, to King David, that all the gates can get sealed in heaven, but the gates of a person who has been hurt is never closed. God says if you hurt someone and you cause them to cry, you hurt someone's feelings, you should know that that gate is never closed. I'm always listening to hear if someone's hurt. I can tell you a story I saw in my lifetime. There was a guy who he was in yeshiva. Someone in yeshiva decided he's going to help him out and give him mussar. So he gave him mussar once, he gave him mussar twice, and finally he went too far. He told him, you should know you're never going to succeed the way you're doing in yeshiva. Guys like you come and go, you're not going to be successful, you have to have more derech eretz, this, that. Yelled at him for like 5 minutes straight in front of other people, and that guy got so hurt he left yeshiva. And I spoke to him afterwards and he said, I'm willing to forgive that person. Fine, he yelled at me, I'm continuing with my life, I don't hold it against him. A week later that person was out, the person who yelled at him. I saw it with my own eyes. Guy. He had a stroke. He never continued. He was moved in old age home. Finished. Never never to be seen again in the walls of Beis Medrash. Something like that. We don't always see it right away. But our sages told us that those gates, God says, I'm listening. If you hurt someone, and that's why our sages said we have to be careful with our wives because they get hurt more easily. They take things to heart more easily. And then the Gemara quotes a Tanakh verse, Hameanet Ager. If someone afflicts a ger is someone who's new to the people, and therefore he's more sensitive. And that's why the Torah warns us so many times to be kind to a ger. If someone hurts a ger, he has transgressed 3 lavim, and if someone oppresses him, he has transgressed 2. Why is it that if someone says something hurtful to him, he hurts him, he transgresses 3? Because the Torah says, V'ger lo tone, do not hurt a ger, do not afflict him. When you have a ger in your land, don't afflict him. And then there's a general prohibition to hurt one another. The ger, bichlal amito, and the ger is like one of the people, so he's included in the general prohibition, and he has another 2. And then the Gemara quotes a braiser, Rav Lezer Agodo says, the Torah warned us in 36 places, and according to some opinions, 46 places, that we should be careful to be kind to get. So this is the Gemara we saw. What is this that they say, and it's quoted time and again, Lo Bashamayim Hi, it isn't in the heavens. When Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to the Jewish people, he tells them, Lo Bashamayim Hi, the Torah isn't in the heavens. Leimor, that a person could say, Mi yale lanu ha-shamayim ha-vikachay lanu, who could go up to the heavens and take the Torah? Ki karov elecha hadavar mod mod, the Torah is very close to you. Beficha uvilvavcha lasoto, you have it in your mouth, you have it within your heart, you have the ability to do the Torah. So the simple understanding is, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jewish people, no one has an excuse they can't learn Torah. It's not like you have to go up to the heavens to get the Torah. If it were in the heavens, you'd still have to go get it. But bottom line, the Torah is accessible to all. We know that there are different crowns in Judaism. There's the crown of Kahuna, there's the crown of Malchus, the crown of priesthood, the crown of kingship, and there's the crown of Torah. And the crown of Torah is greater than those two, and the crown of Torah is accessible to all. Whoever wants to can get the crown of Torah. A person can't say, well, my father wasn't a great rabbi, I can't be a great rabbi. You want to learn? You can be a great rabbi. No one is barred from accessing the crown of Torah. That's waiting for everyone. So that's one understanding. Simple understanding is you have the potential to do it. Anyone who wants can access the crown of Torah. But our sages applied this pasuk halachically. And our sages learned that God was telling the Jewish people, Lo bashamayim, the Torah is no longer in the heavens. The Torah was in the heavens. I gave it to Moshe. Moshe gave you the Torah, and he gave you the laws of inference with which to learn the Torah. From now on, the Torah is given to you. And the Rambam, in his introduction to Mishnayot, the Rambam takes this a step further. The Rambam says, let's say we have a Beis Medrash. We're sitting here learning Torah. And a question arises, let's take the case of Tanuro Shel Achnai, the oven that they were arguing here, Rabbi Lezer and the sages. And let's say this argument had taken place in a generation where there were prophets. And we have the great prophet, let's say Eliyahu. Eliyahu, everyone knows Eliyahu, we just learned Tanit Be'Eliyahu. Everyone knows he's a great prophet. So he's been held by us in high esteem as a prophet. We've validated his prophecies. And we know that he's a truthful prophet. Let's say he'd walk into Beis Medrash, and he'd say, the halacha is one way. And we don't care which way he'd say. He'd say, God told me that the halacha is either like Rabbi Lezer or like the sages, whichever way he wanted. He'd walk in and say, I'm telling you, God sent me to tell you, the halacha is like this. Says the Rambam, we take Eliyahu Hanavi to the gallows. We'd say, Eliyahu, till today you said true prophecy. Today you walked in here and told us that God sent you to tell us that the halacha is such. This is a proof that you're a false prophet. Chayav Misa, we're taking you out to the gallows. The Rambam says that when the Torah told us, Lo Vashamayimi, when the Torah told us the Torah is not in heavens, the Torah basically told us, God said, I am promising you that from now on I will not send a prophet to interfere in the halachic process. From here on in, you have the rules, you have the laws, Achei Rabim Natot. Go by the majority opinion. So if a prophet would walk in, if Eliyahu would walk in and would say, I have a tradition that the halacha is this way, we'll listen to him. He has a tradition, so he's like every other rabbi. We'll count his opinion. If he'll walk in and he'll say, I have a proof from the Torah, I'll prove to you that this is the halacha, we'll listen to him. He's no less than any other rabbi. But if he walks in and says, I have a prophecy, God sent me to tell you that the halacha is such, then we say, it can't be. God already promised us he's not going to interfere in the halacha over here. So a prophet cannot use his prophecy to define halacha. We know that a prophet cannot tell us new mitzvot. The Torah says, this is the Torah and there aren't going to be any additions. The Torah isn't going to change. God tells us in the Torah, Eila mitzvot, these are the commandments I'm sending with Moshe, it isn't going to change. No prophet's going to walk in and give you a new commandment. We know that a prophet can say, Orat Shai, can say, God told me that now specifically with regard to this specific halacha for today, we should do things differently. On a one-time basis, a prophet could tell us the halacha is different. But for a prophet to tell us that a mitzvah has changed, Chayav Misa. Or for a prophet to walk in and tell us that the halacha in this discussion is one way or the other, regardless of which opinion he takes, if he claims that God sent him to rule this way, so then we say he's Chayav Misa. Then he gets the death penalty and we don't listen to his prophecy. So when Rabbi Eliezer brought all these spiritual proofs that it reached a point that a heavenly voice came out and said, Talach is like Rabbi Eliezer, what are you arguing with him for? Our sages said, if he'd be a prophet, we wouldn't accept what he's saying. God, you told us that you're not going to interfere. So from now on, we don't turn to you to ask what the halacha is. Mekter Rav Shri Raigon. So Rav Shri Raigon had told us that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they went to Beitar, and then Beitar was destroyed, and that's where we saw the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, about the whole story of Bar Kochva and what a great city of Torah Beitar was, and how Beitar ultimately was destroyed. And then the sages were scattered, and over here we discussed the Machlokas about how many sages were involved in the wars of Bar Kochva, and we pointed out that Rav Shri Raigon seems to be going with the Rambam, Maimonides' opinion, that most of the sages backed Bar Kochva, not only Rabbi Akiva. And Rav Shri Raigon is saying, as a result of all the confusion and turmoil and persecution that was going on at the time, our sages could not serve and could not learn the tradition as well as they wanted. And there were many machlokot, there started to be many disagreements as to what the halacha is. After the passing of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the Rebbe of Rabbi Eliezer, there remained Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Dosa ben Arkinas, and others from that previous generation. And even though at that period Rav Shri Raigon is telling us the rabbis had concluded that the halacha is like Beis Hillel, if you recall, many of the machlokas and shas are disagreements between the disciples of Hillel and the disciples of Shammai. We have Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Shammai and Hillel only had 3 points that they disagreed on. 4 points, 4 halachas that they disagreed on. But their disciples had many. They had many machlokot. And the rabbis had concluded that the halacha is like Beis Hillel everywhere. Nonetheless, there were still other machlokot in the generation of Rabbi Gamliel. For example, and here Rav Shri Raigon quoted this example of Rabbi Eliezer of the whole story of Tanur Shel Achnai. So Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua both learned by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and nonetheless they still had disagreements as to what the halacha is. Let's remember, who's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? He's the smallest disciple of Hillel. You remember we said Hillel had 80 special students, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was the smallest one. And we said Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai had covered everything. There was no Gemara he didn't know. There was no Mishnah he didn't know. You remember we saw how he could say an incantation and make a garden grow. He knew even the tradition on understanding witchcraft he had down pat. That our sages had a tradition of what's really going on with witchcraft. He knew how to do that too. And he was the smallest student of Hillel. So his two students were Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. And they had many disagreements. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yossi from Galilee, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Rabbi Hananiah ben Tradion, Rabbi Lezer Chisma, Abba Chalafta, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, and the students that sat before them were Shimon ben Azai, Shimon ben Zoma, and other rabbis of that time. Another grouping of rabbis, which the Talmud tells us that began off as students and then became contemporaries, were Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva started off as a student of Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Akiva learned by them. He was a disciple. And then the Gemara quotes that a child walked before them, a kid, and he was disrespectful. He took off his hat, like a way of mocking them, the rabbis. So Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua were sitting there. And one said, must be his mother was Anida when she was with her husband. That's why the kid came out like this. She didn't go to mikveh the way she should, and that's why her son came out to be so disrespectful. What?
He said he was a mamzer.
And the other one said, he's a mamzer. It's not Nida. If he's so disrespectful, must be he's a bastard. That he comes from an illicit marriage that's so bad that the kid becomes a mamzer. And Rabbi Akiva said, he's both. So they said, you're arguing on your rabbis? So he said, let's check. They checked it out and came out that Rabbi Akiva was right, that he was both. And this is an example that the Gemara gives, that Rabbi Akiva became a contemporary of his rabbis. That his rabbis taught him and he was able to argue with them and move a step forward. So he's one example of someone who began as a student and moved forward to be contemporary. Another one is Rabbi Lezer HaModoi, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, should remember that name, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. When the Romans ruled that no one could pass on the tradition, no one could give smicha. Remember a few classes ago we discussed that there's smicha. That you give one the ability to be rabbi, to give halachic ruling, which began with Moshe Rabbeinu, who leaned his two hands on Yoshua. That's why it's called smicha. Smicha means literally to lean on. And this tradition continued from Moshe till the generation of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. When the Romans ruled that no one may continue this tradition, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava went into a forest and took four or five students, and he gave them smicha. And because of him, the smicha continued a few more generations. The Romans heard about this, so they came to the forest just after he gave the smicha, and they started chasing them. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava told the students, he said, "I'm not going to make it, you guys run." And he stood there, and the Romans started shooting arrows at him.
One of them was Rebbe?
No? I don't remember. I don't remember the names. I don't remember. I don't remember who were the five. I don't remember. So, it says that they made him like a target. No. Like when you shoot bow and arrows, they shot, I think, 400 or 500 arrows through him before they could kill him. God didn't want him dead, it seems. But at the end of the day, they killed him. But thanks to him, thanks to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, the oral tradition continued. The smicha, the tradition continued even without smicha, but the smicha continued. So he was another one that began off as a student and then became a contemporary, and Rabbi Yishmael. And at that time we have Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera out in Netzivim. You guys learned about Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera in the Gemara in Pesachim. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Betera lived a long life because he was around still from the time of the temple. At that period, after the destruction of the temple, there was a period of calm. And was a very important period because that's when the sages could regroup to try and rearrange the oral law to make it to make Seder. And in the time of the destruction of the temple and the persecution that ensued, the oral law was almost forgotten, both because of the destruction of the temple and the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. At that time there were many sages, some of them were Rabbanim, and they had a base medrash, and some of them were students. As the story goes, in the time of Rav Lazar ben Azariah, and here we'll see that Gemara in Brachos. We have 5 more minutes. The Gemara quotes the following discussion. Tfilat Arvit, the evening prayer. Is it reshut or chovah? Is the evening prayer as obligatory as the morning and afternoon prayer? Or is the evening prayer, Tfilat Arvit, a mitzvah, but it's not as obligatory as the other prayers, what we call reshut? It doesn't mean you have permission to do it or not to do it. It means you have to do it. But the obligation isn't as heavy as the other prayers, meaning if a person would have if a person would have a reason to forego it, we'll manage Tfilat Arvit is not as obligatory as the other prayers. So the Gemara quotes this question, and the Gemara quotes that the question was asked to Rabbi Gamliel, who was the Nasi. And Rabbi Gamliel said that Tfilat Arvit is chovah, it's obligatory. So the one who asked him, who the Gemara later identifies was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the one who asked him said, but Rabbi Yoshua told me that it is reshut, that it's not as heavy an obligation as Tfilat, as the other prayers. So he said, wait till the rabbis, and he used an interesting nickname for them. He said, the people who carry shields, just like they're going to war, wait till they come to the base medrash. So the rabbis entered the base medrash, and they asked, is the evening prayer reshut or chovah? The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we have Tanai, quote, the story happened, the student came before Rabbi Yeshua, he asked him, is the evening prayer reshut or chovah? He said, it is reshut. He came before Rabbi Gamliel and asked him, Rabbi Gamliel told him, it is chovah. He said, Rabbi Yeshua told me it is reshut. He said, wait till the Baalei Trisin, the rabbis who carry shields, enter the Beis Medrash. Rav Kook on this Gemara points out, Why are the rabbis called men who go to war? They carry shields, they're going to war. So he said, because learning Torah is like a war, it's true. But notice that they're not called people who carry swords, but people who carry shields. They're arguing it's as though they're going to war, but it's not a war to kill one another. So to speak, they're carrying the defense. I'll defend my opinion, you defend your opinion, and obviously part of defending is pointing out why each one is trying to point out why his opinion is more correct. So they enter the Beis Medrash, and Rav Gamliel asked, this student stood up before all the rabbis, was a huge Beis Medrash. He asked, is the evening prayer reshut or chovah, permission or obligation? Rav Gamliel said, it's chovah. So no one said a word. Rav Gamliel asked the rabbis, he said, is there anyone that disagrees with this? So Rav Yeshua said to Rav Gamliel, he said, no. So Rav Gamliel said to Rav Yeshua, but they quoted me in your name that you said that it is reshut, that you yourself disagree. So Rav Yeshua didn't respond. So he told Rav Yeshua, stand on your feet and they'll testify against you. Rav Yeshua stood up and said, if I were alive and he were dead, then I could disagree with him. But now that I'm alive and he's alive, so how could one that's alive contradict one that's alive? Fine. He didn't say, that's all he had to say. And when we review the Gemara next week, we'll analyze what he meant by that. What was he saying with that? So Rabbi Yehoshua was standing on his feet. Rabbi Gamliel was giving the shir. And Rabbi Yehoshua was an old man. He was from a few generations earlier. Rabbi Yehoshua was a disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Let's follow. We said Hillel was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Rebbe. So we'll do it orally, or we'll first write it on the board.
Before the destruction.
Before the destruction of the temple, Hillel becomes Nasi.
Hillel's son Shimon is Nasi after him. And we have Hillel's student, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Right is his children?
Yeah. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has a student, Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Shimon's son, Rabbi Gamliel, is this Rabbi Gamliel's grandfather. He was the Nasi. His Rabbi Gamliel has Zakkai. And then Shimon, and then Gamliel. So you notice that we have four generations down from Hillel. We have Hillel, Shimon, Gamliel, Shimon, and then Gamliel. This Rabbi Gamliel was 1, 2, 3, 4 generations after Hillel. Whereas we have those first four generations, Hillel, Shimon, Gamliel, Shimon, they were Nesim the last 100 years before the destruction of the temple. So if you do the math, you figure that in order for all four of them to be Nesim those 100 years, must be that this Rabbi Shimon, the youngest Rabbi Shimon, must have been very young when he became a Nasi. And his son Rabbi Gamliel is this Rabbi Gamliel. He has to be very young at this point. No, you have one Nasi at a time. So Hillel has a disciple, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and his disciple is this Rabbi Yeshua. At this point that this Rabbi Gamliel is Nasi, he's a very young Nasi. And he's speaking to Rabbi Yeshua, who's a very old sage. He's from three generations before that. Rabbi Yeshua is a contemporary of his grandfather. He's speaking to a sage when he's telling him, you stand and we're continuing the shir. And he's arguing with him and he's saying, why are you saying you didn't say anything? He's speaking to someone that's his grandfather's age. He's speaking to someone that's a contemporary of his grandfather. And from here, we'll continue Mitzvah next week with this story to understand what really went on here. What was the discussion? Yeah?
Isn't four generations 100 years?
Yeah, generations over here, we don't
this is 100 years before the destruction of the temple. So by the time they took a